The date is September 22nd, 1995, and we're watching Canadian Bacon. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Cabral to my Roy Boy.
From parts unknown. Hello, everybody. I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, to continue our month of posthumously released movies, we brought in a guest, someone that I had the pleasure of meeting through our mutual friend Michael over at the Farm to Fable podcast. Please welcome for the first time, Mr. Chris Gaffredo.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Very excited to have you, Chris. Now, I'm just going to get this out of the way right now because I know you listen to the show. So you know this usually comes later in the show, but I'm going to ask it now. Is this a movie you've seen before?
Not until about 2 days ago.
Had you ever heard of it before?
I had heard of it, okay. But I had never seen it. I've never discussed it with anyone. This is as fresh a take as you're going to get.
Cool. Excellent. So I've got a little something else to get to know you a little bit later. But first off, this week we are looking back at September 1995 when the movies in theaters were Empire Records, Hackers, Showgirls, Seven, and of course our movie for today, Canadian Bacon, which earned $163,971 on an $11 million budget.
What? That hurts.
Yeah. So I don't know if they converted it into, you know, if maybe it was, maybe
those
they
Canadian
made $11
dollars.
Dollars yeah. Canadian dollars. Yeah, that's all I was thinking there. Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia and like, that is
you can't believe it, right? I went to three different sources too because I didn't believe it on IMDb.
That is legitimately an unbelievable number.
Yep.
Now, like, it's unbelievable for two reasons. It's unbelievable that this movie could fail that badly. Mm-hmm. It's also unbelievable that the budget was $11 million.
True.
Like, a little bit.
You know, it's got to come with the cast, though, because the cast in this movie is actually kind of stacked.
For sure. Yeah, it's like, it must all be cast, because I can't imagine, like, location-wise, it cost all that.
The sets were terrible. There was one point I was like, is that supposed to be the White House? I don't know.
Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like I'm sure this movie's opening weekend was spoiled, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say. It does make sense because, I mean, I don't know what I would have thought this movie would have cost. I definitely wouldn't have thought that it would have made so little, but
I would have guessed at least half that for budget, though.
Yeah, I would have guessed half that for budget.
I mean, the budget's also, not that big, but like
the box office is so bad though that I feel like it must have not had like a full scale theatrical release.
No,
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, like it seems like maybe it was like that's indie film money. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's not an indie film budget.
Yeah, how does a movie not make $1 million?
Yeah.
Like 178. That's so low that
no,
it's
163. Not okay. Not 163.
All right. Well, yeah. Like lower. I'm looking at Wikipedia, but like
okay. I transcribed the wrong number, but it's still yeah.
That's so low that it just seems like pity money almost. Like I don't know. that's wild to me.
Well, they have more taglines than money for this movie. So, tagline, I've got four taglines for the poster of this movie this week. First one, Bud Boomer is leading the American invasion into Canada just as soon as he can find it.
Yeah.
Oh, He didn't seem to have a problem with that part, but okay.
No, it's a line that's contradicted. Yeah, he says it's right across the river. So, well, number two, it gets lonely at the top when there's no more butt to kick.
I don't know where that comes from at all.
It's just, I don't know, the president.
Does the general
there,
say that at some point? Or?
No, but it seems like the message that they're trying to say there. It's like when you're a top dog, you got no one to play with.
They're saying the U.S. is all alone with nobody to fight, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, number three, help America fight the Canadians.
Nah.
That's a tagline that just gets Blame Canada from running through my head.
The problem with all these taglines is that 3 years later when the South Park movie came out, they did it a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, finally, this could also be part of the song. Surrender pronto, or we'll level Toronto.
I love that one.
I like at least the rhyming. It makes it a little fun.
Yeah, and it's plucked right from the movie. It is something that the president says at one point. But all of them, not very good descriptions of the movie. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
This is a long one. When the president of the United States shuts down a weapons manufacturing plant operated by an unscrupulous business tycoon named RJ Hacker, the former employees are pissed and his approval rating plummets. Seeking to find a way to get back into the good graces of hardworking Americans, the president and his advisors decide that the thing to do is to bring back the Cold War, but unfortunately for them, their perennial adversary Russia isn't interested in starting things up again. Serendipitously, New York Sheriff Bud Boomer criticizes Canadian beer while attending a hockey game in Ontario and incites a brawl that ends up on the news and catches the attention of the president's security advisor, Stuart Smiley, who, after collecting more information about Canada, determines that it could serve as the new enemy America needs and begins an anti-Canada propaganda campaign, which Boomer believes wholeheartedly. Boomer, his girlfriend Honey, and their friends Roy Boy and Cabral Jabbar form a local militia after foiling an attempt by some fake Canadians to destroy a hydroelectric plant. In retaliation, Boomer and the gang sneak across the border to litter on Canadian lands, which leads to Honey being arrested by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. In a rescue attempt, Boomer, Roy Boy, and Cabral sneak into a Canadian power plant and cause a countrywide blackout. That's apropos because right now Alberta at least is facing rolling blackouts, so there you go. Causing the contrived tension between the U.S. and Canada to move into reality. Meanwhile, hackers seeking revenge on the president uses a software program called the Hacker Hellstorm to activate missiles across the country. The president learns that the signal causing the activation of the silos originated from Canada, and Hacker offers to sell a program to the president that can cancel out the Hellstorm for $1 trillion. Stuart, fed up with the president being too busy to give Hacker the money, realizes that Hacker is the one controlling the silos, not Canada, and takes the operating codes required to stop the Hellstorm from Hacker, accidentally killing him in the process. The president orders Stuart's arrest despite his protest that he now has the codes required to deactivate the missiles, which are aimed at Moscow. As the launch time approaches, the president pleads with Canadian Prime Minister Clark MacDonald over the phone to stop the launch. In the end, it's Honey who saves the day. After being taken to a hospital upon her capture, she escapes to the CN Tower. There she discovers the central computer for the Hellstorm and destroys it with a machine gun, aborting the launch sequence. She then reunites with Boomer and they return to the United States on a speedboat. There you go.
Do you need a towel? Okay. Right on. So, Canadian Bacon is one of those movies that I know that I found around the time that I didn't find it in 95. So I was not one some of that 170 grand that they made in the theaters. I found it later when I went on my arty movie kick. You know, Clerks led me to a movie like Canadian Bacon is basically how I feel about it. Yeah, Clerks is the one that kind of got me into the indie thing. And then I saw movies like Canadian Bacon and Suicide Kings. And, you know, you travel the Boondock Saints route and the Donnie Darko route. So Canadian Bacon, though, when I saw it, I loved it. It's John Candy. And I mean, that's really all I have to say about Canadian Bacon. Now, Chris, because we've already established that you haven't seen this, what I want to do for you instead is I want to establish what your baseline knowledge of Canucks is. Because, okay, you know, you are American.
Yep.
I know you're in the New York tri-state area. I know, you know, so maybe exposure to being that close to Canada, maybe you have a bit of Canadian knowledge. It could help. I just remember back when this movie came out, there used to be this little segment that they played on TV where it was like talking to Americans. And they would go down and ask Americans questions about Canadians, and they knew nothing. But I feel like maybe in the 30 years with the advancement of, you know, information, maybe you guys know more about us. So a new segment just for tonight, Quizzing an American.
Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, so I've got some questions here for you. Okay, so the first two, these are gimmies. If you paid attention to the movie, you know this. What is the capital of Canada?
Ottawa.
Excellent. Did you know that before this movie?
Hell no.
Okay. What are the two official languages of Canada?
English and French.
Okay. Did you know that before this movie?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Number three, name two Canadian actors that appear in this movie.
John Candy. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is going to be tough. Canadian, there's a lot of people in this movie. Rip Torn?
No, I'm sorry. Dan Aykroyd is the
character. Oh, I knew that too. I forgot he was in it.
I should have thrown it to Colin. I'm sorry, Colin. I should have thrown it to you. We'll make that a rule from now on. Okay,
As soon as I saw him show up, I was like, oh, right, he's Canadian. I totally forgot he was in it.
I was just going to go off of the list of Canadian celebrities that they list in that news article. Oh, that news.
Yeah. Rick Moranis. And Mike Myers, yeah. Okay, number four. Chris, who is the current Canadian Prime Minister?
Justin Trudeau.
And as a follow-up, what is his dad's first name? Because he was also a Prime Minister.
Ooh, I think I had heard that his dad was a Prime Minister. I have no idea what his dad's name is.
Pierre Trudeau. That was in the 70s. Very, very Pierre controversial.
Pierre Elliott Trudeau.
Pierre Elliott Trudeau, yeah. Correct.
That was before I was even born, son.
Okay, number five. The Prime Minister in this movie, Clark MacDonald, is named after two former real Prime Ministers. Can you name one of them?
Nope. Okay. Not even gonna try.
James MacDonald and I don't know where Clark comes from.
Joe Clark was Prime Minister from 1979 to 1980. And John A. MacDonald, who was the first Prime Minister of Canada. Yes, that's how they got the name Clark MacDonald. Okay, well, you're doing okay, though. You're doing okay. Chris, number six, what famous superhero was created by a Canadian?
Ooh, okay. And I feel like this is like right up my alley, too.
It is right up your alley.
Oh, famous superhero created by a Canadian.
He might have even been featured on a podcast, James.
Oh, so I know it's not Superman. Oh, I don't think it's Batman. I'm just gonna take a shot in the dark and go Green Arrow.
I'm sorry, sir. You would have been correct with Superman. Joe Schuster is Canadian.
Joe Schuster's Canadian?
Joe Schuster is Canadian. Jerry Siegel is not, and they so half of Superman is created by a Canadian. Yeah,
it's part of a secret identity.
We know because we have these things in Canada called heritage moments, and they made sure to make one about you. Mm-hmm.
And don't spoil any others, Colin, because that's featured in another question coming up. Well, number seven, what is the color of a Canadian $5 bill?
Blue.
You nailed it. Ding, ding, ding.
That Blue. Is a damn good guess.
Yeah. Want to take a guess at a $10 bill?
Red.
No, that's a 50. A purple is a $10 bill.
Is it all money just green? Come on.
A $20 bill is green in Canada.
Oh, yes. So there you go.
Okay, number eight. Okay, I'm going to eliminate Ontario, British Columbia, and Quebec because everyone knows those. Can you name three other Canadian provinces?
Alberta.
Okay.
You kind of gave that one to me, but I didn't know that.
That helps.
Wait, where are the three you said?
Ontario, Quebec, or British Columbia?
Okay. Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia is one, yeah. Well, I should say I'll accept territories as well. Provinces or territories. That just threw you off even more, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I'm just going to... New Brunswick?
New Brunswick is correct, yes!
Yes,
Newfoundland, Prince Edward Island, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. Those would have also all been appropriate guesses.
I was thinking Prince Edward's Island, but I wasn't sure if that was like a territory or province. I was like, is that a city or something? I don't know.
It's our smallest province, and our territories are the Yukon, Northwest Territories, and Nunavut. Yeah, so...
What was that last one?
Nunavut.
Oh,
it's
that's
indigenous Inuit name. Yeah, it's spelled like N-U-N-U-V-E-T? No, you... I don't even know how to spell it. That's actually something that has become a territory in my lifetime. So, I wasn't raised on that one. Anyway, it's like Pluto disappearing as a planet. Okay, number 9, you are on a roll here. Okay, I'm impressed by the province one. I gotta say it. But okay, number 9. What sport, popularized by Americans, was invented in Canada?
Football.
No, I'm sorry.
Damn it.
Colin, heritage moment.
Basketball. What's it? Naismith. James Naismith.
I should have known that one.
That's great. Okay, well, here we go. Only a couple left here. Number 10. This one, I'll be impressed if Colin knows this one. This one's a tough one. We're at, like, top-level challenge here. Okay. In 1994... the National Sports of Canada Act was passed to officially recognize hockey as an official national sport. Hockey has only been a national sport for 30 years, but you may have thought otherwise, okay? This is the context you need for this question.
And I like hockey. I'm a hockey guy, so...
But they did not replace the former... national sport. Instead, what they did was make hockey the official winter sport of Canada. What is the official summer sport of Canada?
Oh, okay. So summer sport. So it's not going to be curling.
Nope.
No.
Not curling.
Oh, I'm gonna go out on a weird limb here. I'm gonna say equestrian. Just because you said Colin wouldn't know. So I was going a whole weird way.
I like that answer so much, I'm going to say you're wrong, but I want another guess. I want to see what else you come up with.
Okay.
Like beaver hunting? I don't know. Moose wrangling?
Okay, so summer sport, huh? Basketball. James Naismith, we just talked about this.
Interesting. Okay, you are wrong. I'm sorry. No. Colin, do you know?
Yeah, it's lacrosse.
Lacrosse, that's right. Sport taken from our indigenous that was
that was a native sport, right?
Yeah, and then popularized by the European settlers, yeah. And so lacrosse was the national sport of Canada for many, many years. Until everyone was like, dude, everyone thinks it's hockey anyway. Can we do something about this? And so, yeah, they instead gave it the distinction of winter sport and summer sport. So there we go.
So basically, you made it your country sport and you're not winning another Stanley Cup.
It's been like that, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
We're all like, you know, we're really, really good at it on the national level, not so much in the National Hockey League, but, you know, internationally. But I guess... the U.S. did beat our world junior team this year. And
the Canadians are so optimistic that quite often we will go, well, that team was like half Canadians anyway, so Canada basically won the cup. It's going to come touring here at least.
That's like the dark side of National Hockey League fandom in Canada is as soon as one of the Canadian teams, as soon as they're all eliminated, it just becomes a game of, well, who has the most Canadian players?
Yeah,
that's who we cheer for.
Okay, well, Chris, last question, and this is how it's relevant to the movie. what do we call Canadian bacon in Canada?
Oh, damn. Bacon?
No.
That wasn't a real guess. That's just kind of the obvious. Canadian bacon, ham.
Well, you would think, because it is basically ham. No, we call... Colin. Colin, to you. What do we call Canadian bacon?
I actually don't know. I thought it was ham.
Oh. No, back bacon.
Oh, back bacon.
Back bacon, yes. According to the American Pork Producers Association, the name was coined to designate that style of bacon, which was many years ago imported from Canada because such a cut was not produced in the U.S. at the time. And we call it back bacon, generally. A lot of us call it ham, too, yeah. But, no, we don't call it Canadian bacon, though.
That makes sense.
McDonald's still does.
I guess it makes sense that you wouldn't call it Canadian bacon, so...
Yeah. Brazil nuts are just nuts in Brazil. Well, there we go. Well done. Well done. You did fairly well, but now we kind of know what your baseline is for Canadian knowledge.
To be fair, as an American, my own knowledge of my own country is not that great.
Oh, okay.
One of the first lines in the movie is... Like, when William McKinley here and got shot, I literally had to look up if that was a real thing or not.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, Colin, before we jump into this, your history with Canadian bacon, because we have talked about this a few times on this show, and so I know this is one that you have seen.
Yeah, I would actually say my experience with Canadian bacon pretty much mirrors yours exactly. I think I watched Clerks, and then I was like, their movies are in this similar vein. Yeah. And then I had heard of Canadian bacon, and you know, I'm always kind of a sucker for Canada versus America fiction.
Why not?
I love the South Park. I love there's a comic book. Miniseries called We Stand on Guard, where it's Canada and the US go to war, that I really enjoy. So yeah, and I love John Candy too, so I was down for this movie. And I think I only watched it, I bought it, back in the day where when you wanted to watch something you didn't have streaming, so you just had to go find it and buy it when you saw it. And
that's what Walmart was for, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's probably a $5 DVD I'm thinking that I found. And I watched it. I remember liking it, and that's kind of my history with it.
I know you guys are doing the post-hominous movie releases, but you should have paired Canadian bacon with American pie.
Oh, wow. That would have been nice. Yeah. Well, here we go. Let's jump into Canadian Bacon, directed by Michael Moore. Yes, that Michael Moore. This is his first and only scripted movie.
Can see why.
Yeah.
Didn't really have the return of Fahrenheit 9/11. At least those movies made money.
Something tells me after this movie came out, studios went rushing to get this hot new director.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, produced by David Brown, Ron Rotholtz, and Gregory Goodman, who gets producer credit for the reshoots, and also Michael Moore is a producer, and written by Michael Moore. He just went, first time doing a scripted thing, he just went, you know what, I'm going to do all three parts, right there. But, nice. Apparently he wrote the screenplay during the first Gulf War. It was his reaction to what he felt the U.S. government's manipulation of the media. Supporting, because they were supporting Operation Desert Storm. So, this was his answer to that.
It definitely has his political bent to it. So,
yeah. Yeah. I do have to say, though, with having recently watched Doctor Strangelove, Chris, is that one that you're familiar with, Doctor Strangelove? Or how
I have not seen it.
No? Okay. It is a very similar feel to at least the presidential stuff in this movie. Colin, you didn't happen to watch it, did you, when I was doing that now? Okay.
No.
Anyway, so we open this movie with the sweeping views of Niagara Falls and the God Bless America song, and it's interspersed with the fact that, the president is coming to this town for the first time because of this factory closure. And like you said, Michael Moore's thumbprints. If you didn't know it was a Michael Moore movie, you'd kind of go, but it kind of feels like one. Like, that's where I, you know, all the talk about the $11 million budget, like, it feels kind of like a documentary in a way, the way that it's shot. Like, even the film feels a little grittier, yeah, a little more washed out.
I mean, if I could go back in time and like, talk to this young Michael Moore, I think I would tell him to kind, like, in a world where we now have, like, The Office and Parks and Rec, I think this movie would have worked, like, infinitely better if it was shot as, like, a mockumentary of, yeah, following, like, the quote-unquote, like, average American, like Bud Boomer. And then, you know, you're in the president's office, and, like, and then all this stuff happens. And so it's kind of like they're catching it as it happens.
Yeah.
And that would have been brilliant.
Yeah. I think people would have gotten it more, too.
Yeah. Like that's something, the spirit of that is captured in the moment where the reporter is saying, I can't give you all the details, but it's like military classified, and so he's bleeped out for most of what he's saying, right? Like, that's the kind of thing you could have done if you had done that style, is that, you know, you make the presidential stuff look like it's, you know, found footage, or, yeah, you know, it was classified or something.
Well, and yeah, even as a guy who is has become known for his documentaries, like, I feel like it would have been better for his style anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I love just the opening suicide attempt by Roy Boy and the news story. This is still one of my favorite jokes in the movie, is where they talk about the fact that the police officers get $25 for anyone that they save and $50 for anyone that they fish out of the river. And we hard cut to them down on the shore yelling, jump, jump. I love that moment. That's still one of my favorite jokes in this entire movie.
Yeah, I didn't remember what was happening in this scene. I thought Roy Boy was going to, like, or not, that's not Roy Boy. What's that guy's name again?
Wasn't that Roy Boy? I thought that
was
that
Roy. Yeah, Boy? It was Roy Boy who was going to jump.
Yeah,
okay,
Roy Boy
was going to jump.
Yeah,
I was thinking that he was going to do some kind of, like, interference with the like the presidential
motorcade.
Yeah. Like, he was going to try to assassinate the president or something.
Yeah, roll in front of him.
And then the motorcade just drives right past him. He's, like, tied up with duct tape and, like, about to jump, and they're just like, whatever, we don't care.
Yeah.
Although, my thought, in this completely different movie, I don't know if you guys picked up on the fact, but that's Benny from the original Brendan Fraser, The Mummy. And they're standing there next to the Niagara River, and the only thing I could think of was, Benny, you're on the wrong side of the river.
Oh, my God. Wow. Nope. It's been too long since I've seen The Mummy.
Haven't seen that movie in a while.
Yeah. But he's got to be doing some sort of brown face in The Mummy then, right?
Who knows? I think it's just typical.
I remember,
like,
Benny being Arab. You know, he had a fez on and...
He did. I think it's typical, just like, nobody will notice.
Yeah, okay. He's tanned enough. Yeah.
It's the 90s. You know, let's roll with it.
Yeah, we're talking casting, so let's talk about this cast. Because, yeah, pretty stacked cast, like we said. So it's got to be where the money went.
Yeah, we got Alan Alda as the unnamed president of the United States.
Yeah. I love how he's unnamed.
Yeah. At first I thought it was weird that they never, especially because they do give the prime minister a name that they didn't. Yeah. They did. I thought I had just missed the president's name until I watched it the second time. John Candy is Bud B. Boomer.
Yeah, that's right. Our subject of why we're here, you know, this was posthumously released. This, technically, Wagons East was his last movie. However, this was the last one released because he filmed this before Wagons East.
Bill Nunn is Cabral Jabbar, the deputy sheriff of Niagara County.
And we've seen him before in Sister Act and Spider-Man.
Okay.
Oh, Kevin, he's in Spider-Man.
Kevin J. O'Connor is Roy Boy. Rhea Perlman is Honey. I feel like, yeah, she's kind of like the same. She's just, I don't even remember what her character's name is in Cheers, but that's all I could see.
Carla. Yeah.
Kevin Pollak is Stuart Stu Smiley.
Yep.
G.D. Spraldin is R.J. Hacker. Rip Torn is General Dick Panzer.
And so this is the second time we've seen Rip Torn and John Candy together in a movie on this show, because they were in Summer Rental. He was Scully. Arr! All
right. Stephen Wright is the Niagara Mountie. Jim Belushi is Charles Jackal, the news reporter for MBS News. Richard E. Council is Russian President Vladimir Klyushkin. Brad Sullivan.
You won!
Could you even imagine that happening today?
Yeah. It's okay. You won. You can have it.
Stanley Anderson is Edwin S. Simon, and the news anchor for NBS News. The inconceivable Wallace Shawn is Canadian Prime Minister Clark MacDonald.
Now, is he just a picture, or do I miss a scene with Wallace Shawn?
No, there's a scene where he's talking on the phone.
But all you can hear is his voice on the other end, right?
No, there's a scene where, like, you see him in his office, I feel.
Oh, I must have missed it. Because I know they show a photo of him in the closing credits, where it's like Canadian Prime Minister Clark MacDonald, whatever his tie-up to the storyline was. But
now you have me thinking I'm Mandela affecting myself.
No, I'm with you, Sean. I saw him at the end in the picture, and I do not remember seeing him in the movie at all.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but...
Michael Moore, the director, makes a cameo as the redneck in one of the news interviews.
Yeah, he sure does.
Dan Aykroyd plays one of the OPP, Ontario Provincial Police Officers. In an they say it's uncredited in Wikipedia.
Yeah, it is uncredited.
And then Ed Saley also appears as a Mountie in an uncredited role.
Yeah, like just, yeah. Incredible cast. I don't know what favors Michael Moore called in to get the budget to pay that cast, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I wonder what the... I mean, it seems to me like that's kind of a... It would be similar today, like, if you made a movie and you notice, like, oh, that movie has Adam Sandler, Kevin James, Rob Schneider, David Spade, like... It's like they're...
Chris Rock.
Yeah, like, they're people of, like, a group. So I wonder if, like, there was something, like, he approached, or if there was maybe, like, one of them, like, maybe John Candy was interested and he kind of, like, was in everybody else's ear to do it, or, like, I wonder what the interest was, like, why, even, like, why John Candy decided to do this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he probably liked just the satire of it.
Irony of being the Canadian who's playing the American that hates Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's hilarious the moments that you can tell that he, you know, like when he's swearing about Canada. That's probably the draw, though. Is strangely, this is one of those movies that makes me feel seen as a Canadian in a weird way. It's one of those movies where Michael Moore. The way that he satirizes the American attitude and the Canadian attitude, and just even from the opening where they're selling the weapons in the States, that they're making fun of themselves as much as they're making fun of us.
Yeah.
So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's definitely points where, like, as an American, like, we don't come off well in this movie.
That's true. It is. So, like, and it almost makes you wonder, like, is Michael Moore really Canadian? Like,
it's funny because it's like an ideal, like it's a stereotyped, like I don't know. It's like anytime you watch or you hear people like we live in Canada, but like I hear people talk about like internationally about Canada. Like, oh, they're so polite. They're just so like like we're these docile little like sheep humans. Like...
Yeah, I meet a lot of assholes day to day.
Like even the Mountie, like the fact that he like, you know, the guy that he has the biggest problem with is just somebody who's greedy. Like that's what he really can't tolerate. Whereas he's like the other people who are just like kind of down on their luck. He's like he'll play cards with and whatnot. But
then at the other hand, they're at the hockey game. And apparently all the Canadians get set off by, like, even the mention that their beer night might not be amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, it was such a weird, like, all movie they spend saying, Canadians are the nicest people. You can't piss them off. Unless they're at a hockey game, then they will kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. What should have happened, I think, to incite the brawl would have been something like, you know, he didn't say please, or he didn't say hello.
That would be funny.
Or, like, something like that. Like, something that was, like about the politeness, I think. Because, yeah, getting mad over, like, the beer, it was just not the... Or if they were going to get mad, when they got mad, the Canadians should have been stereotypically, like, oh, that's not very nice, eh? Like,
yeah. Something like that. Yeah, like, mad being so tame that it's just not mad.
Yeah. But, I mean, in the 90s, there was a certain pride for Canadians about their beer.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
I wasn't drinking in the 90s, so I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, I will say that is that, yeah, it's, oh, yeah, our beer is so much better than American beer because it's stronger and all that sort of stuff, so... Yeah, you know, now everybody has a microbrewery. Yeah. And doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, but yeah, no, I, it is a great moment though, you know. And their beer sucks. I'll tell you one thing. And
and then they double down on it at the end. He's like, "All I said was the beer sucks," and it starts all over again.
Yeah, but what kind of beer?
It was Molson, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, I'll tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner.
Oh, there it is.
Always on the lookout for product placements in movies this week, Canadian Bacon is brought to you by Molson Canadian and Budweiser and LA Beers, Bacardi Amber, Pepsi Cola, Chevrolet and Geo Cars, International Trucks, Spam, Bank of Montreal, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Blue Jays, Montreal Canadiens and Buffalo Bills, and Cooper Sports Equipment. Plus the possibly fictional All-Star Bowling Lanes, Women and Guns Magazine, Niagara Gazette, Chicago Daily Sentinel, NBS Nightly News, the Buffalo Bisons. I love that hockey team name. That's my favorite, is it's Buffalo Bisons.
Such a great playoff of the Buffalo Bills.
And the definitely fictional Hacker Dynamics. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. But it's even the fact that buffalo and bison is the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, no, that's they got some sponsors in there. They represented both Canadian and American beer in this one. So, I do like the little speech about why don't you see very many black people playing hockey as well, though. That's a good one. Hey,
oh, when he's like, you think it's easy to slowly take over every sport?
Every sport, yeah. But 1995, look, 30 years in the future, there's a lot more in the league now.
There is.
They're getting in there. They're taking over.
There was a time when the Oilers had, like, 75% of them.
Yeah.
Back in the Mike Greer, Bert the Rock, Anson Carter days.
Yeah. That's true.
The Canadians had PK Subban for a little while, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, we had that too. Yeah.
Then he just kind of like, I don't know what he did. He definitely pissed somebody off because I feel like it wasn't like he was past his prime and then nobody wanted to sign him. So
He just retired like a year or two ago. He was a Devil until he retired. I'm a Devils fan, so.
Yeah.
And now we've got Darnell Nurse. So.
And Evander Kane.
Yeah, so. Anyway. Hockey. Well, at least we got the right guy on the show if you're a hockey fan. And the funny thing is, one of the only other jerseys that I own other than an Oilers jersey is a Devils jersey.
Really?
Yeah.
I have every jersey the Devils franchise has ever worn, including the Kansas City Scouts and Colorado Rockies.
Oh, wow. Do you have a Kraken jersey, Sean?
I have a Kraken jersey. I have a Red Wings jersey. And I have the, Jersey Devils. And then I have, like, five Oilers jerseys. Anyway. Okay.
The Devils are kind of my, like, I can't be a Devils fan because I'm an Avalanche fan. And,
Oh, 2000.
You know, just a 2001 victory.
Yep.
But also, it's like, I feel like you're either Patrick Waugh or you're Martin Brodeur, and I just, you know, Waugh guy all the way.
That's a fair assessment.
I like the line, if life hands you a lemon, you have to crush it into lemonade. I think that's a nice twist on that saying. anyway.
Found the whole, like, that whole idea of the U.S., like, I don't know, I kind of remember feeling this way in, like, during the pandemic, because it just seemed like the world, it was like, we had the world, like, nobody had any more enemies, so it was like, everybody was just turning on, like, was turning inward, and everybody was turning in on itself, and I remember thinking at certain points, like, maybe the pandemic will be, like, the enemy that the world needs to, like, rally together. And that reminds me of, like, this movie where it's, like, it's for his approval rating, but it does always kind of seem like, you know, they talk about, like, George Bush and how, like, George Bush's approval rating was really low, but then 9/11 happened, and then it was, like, all of a sudden, because there's this massive enemy, now it's, like, the America, like, rallied, and then George Bush, like, got reelected or whatever when he was kind of down in the dumps before that. And so this movie obviously was like a few years before that, but it's crazy how much it rings true that, you know, maybe if your political, like, career is stalling, the best way to do it is to kind of try to incite war.
Well, wasn't there also Wag the Dog was a very similar kind of premise for that movie. I never saw that one, but I feel like it was the same thing, like let's manufacture a war.
Yeah, that one, they don't wage war on a real country. They invent some fictional country and use
it's like a movie to, kind of thing. Like they produce like a fake war or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're not wrong. There's so many things in this movie that I'm like so conflicted about just because I'm like, nobody's that stupid, but damn, there's a lot of people that are that stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and that wouldn't happen, but it I could see how we could get there.
Well, nowadays they wear red hats. That's,
exactly.
Yeah.
But even just, like, the whole premise of the movie is we're pissed off because we've stopped making weapons because there's no war, but, like, I just feel like that just wouldn't happen. Like, we'd just be like, there's no war, who cares? Let's just throw another $1 billion at the Pentagon and build some more shit and we don't care. It's fine.
Yeah, even in the propaganda tape that they make, I could totally see them using that. Like, oh look, like 70% of the population is located right at the border. Like nowadays, obviously because of 9/11 and stuff, we need passports to go freely back and forth. But back in the day, you didn't. You just like could go back.
That's right.
Back
day trip
and
to the
forth
States
as you wished.
There was so much of that propaganda film that I'm like, yeah, you just say something that's obvious that isn't a problem, but you say it with some threatening music and kind of scarily, and everyone freaks out, and that is real. That happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's Michael Moore's opportunity to put a documentary in his movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And those are all the parts that I felt like really worked. Like, I love the news stories. I love that propaganda piece. Like, I thought all that was probably some of the best parts of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Chris, in your day job, you are an architect, correct?
Correct.
Now, what do you think of Canada's giant penis? Where does that lie in your, you know, are you a nerd about architecture? Like, do you, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
In the right circles? Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, is the CN Tower, or Canadian National Tower, as they keep calling it in this, no one in Canada calls it the Canadian National Tower, I'll let you know. But, yeah, how is it as an architectural wonder? Is it as impressive as it seems?
I'll admit I'm not terribly familiar with it.
Okay.
I've seen it before, but it's not something I've like looked at or studied. To your point, lots of tall buildings are kind of inherently phallic.
Mm-hmm.
It's when was that built? That was like in the 70s.
I
think I was
like
looking
that.
This up earlier. Yeah. I feel like I feel like it's very Space Needle-ish, and yeah. I'm not sure which one was first, to be honest.
Space Needle was in the 60s. It was made for a world fair in the 60s.
Yeah, so it feels like kind of like they were trying to do that, mm-hmm. and in a very, very American kind of fashion, they kind of went, well, we can do that bigger.
Yeah. Well, our country is very large, so we have to show that off.
I did hear that that was like the tallest building in the world or freestanding structure, I think they refer to it as, until like the Burj Khalifa, right?
In 1995, it was the tallest structure in the world, I guess. I believe that was factually correct, but yeah, I don't think it lasted that longer.
It was beaten in 2007.
Yeah, so at this point, I think the CN Tower is actually somewhere like 8th or 9th in the list for
I think I this morning I saw 9th, but I think it is the tallest in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
From what I read.
Yeah, we've got the tallest building in Western Canada in our city.
What building's that?
Just Stantec Tower. It's just an office tower with some, I believe, condos or hotel above it or something. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just say I can go to New York in under an hour and see all the big famous ones. So.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually
that's all I got.
Something I thought that was ridiculous is when they get to Ontario or whatever, and Bud and Jabbar and Roy when they're driving down they see that building that's just like all windows. They're like, oh, how do they wash all that? And I was like. You're by New York, aren't you?
Like, yeah. They have tall buildings with windows in the States, too. Yeah, that's not something that is uniquely Canadian, that's for sure.
No. Okay, yeah. I did want to know, though, I did see that when he walks up to it, it says it's 10,000 stairs or steps. And I wanted to know if that was real, and I couldn't find information on that. But
that I don't know. I mean, there's no way John Candy's walking to the top.
Oh, not a chance in hell.
That. Yeah. I know I'm not.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for safety reasons, there must be a stairwell that goes all the way down if the elevator broke or something, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Well, I know when I went to the Eiffel Tower, I had the option of taking the elevator pass, or for cheaper, I could take the stairs. So it is an option in some monuments. I believe that the walk to the CN is actually a challenge that... I believe there's even a run that happens once a year that goes up the stairs of the CN.
I know the Empire State Building has a race up the stairs every year, so it's possible.
Yeah.
It's a lot of steps. You ain't doing that.
But yeah, no, that's way too far away from us for me to really know about that. I like that their big crime that they're going to do, though, is sneak over the border and litter.
Yeah.
That's a good one. One thing that's missing, though, from that all that litter is there's no Tim Hortons cups. That disappoints me as a Canadian, is that this is pre, like, the real Tim Hortons boom.
Yeah.
Are they as prevalent as they are made out to be over there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's like, areas where you can have the Tim Hortons on three of the four corners.
Yeah. so they're your version of the Dunkin' Donuts here.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I'm driving through Edmonton, I can be assured that there's Tim Hortons within 5 minutes of me at any point.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're all 24 hours, so you can get something at any time of the day.
Nice. Yeah.
The RCMP scene. I have to say, I love this scene with Stephen Wright as the RCMP. He's a lot of fun. But the whole, we have ways of making you say the letter O is still one of hilarious. My favorite lines. What is this all about, eh?
Okay, just for a second, I do have to point out, it took me a second there to realize Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, okay.
As an American, I had to put that together when you just said that.
did they not refer to it as the RCMP in the movie?
If they did, it just went right, like, okay. It was like, it was in context, so I knew, you know?
Well, the thing is, actually, what happened, like, their uniforms all look right. But if you'll notice, when they first arrive at that RCMP detachment, it actually says Royal Mounted Canadian Police. Like, oh, okay. And I don't know if that's like a legal, like, liability thing that they did, but I did notice that the words were it was like the RMCP, I guess. Like it wasn't the, they didn't keep it RCMP.
Huh, that's funny. I never even really noticed that. No, I did not notice that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea that this police officer is writing thank you notes to his, the inmates at night to make sure that they feel okay.
Thank you for keeping your cell clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want some water? Yeah. Too bad. Oh boy. And when the Delta Squad or Omega Force or whatever they're called bust in, and he's like, "I had a good hand,"
and then he punches him, and he's just like, "That was uncalled for."
Ow. Yeah.
One of the funny things about this movie is it really is kind of like three movies operating concurrently. Like it's almost like a sitcom.
Yeah,
because it's like. There's one story happening with the president and his guys, and it really only crosses over with Bud at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I would say, like, the news team, like, the news stories and all that, they're their own thing as well. And then you have, like, Bud and the gang and the mission to save Honey in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny that it never really, like, they never really cross over all that much.
They really don't.
No.
They kind of mention the Bud story a little bit with the president, like in the middle, but you're right. They don't really interact that much.
Yeah. Well, and this is another reason why I get Dr. Strangelove vibes from this movie. And unfortunately, because neither of you have seen it, you know, that reference is lost on you. But any of the listeners that are listening to this episode that have also listened to that episode, you get it. You get it. But it very much, with Dr. Strangelove, it very much is the same thing. There's one story going on in the war room. There's one story going on a plane. There's one, you know, and so, yeah. But I do like that about this movie. I think that's one of the things that's really fun is, and the stakes are so high for Boomer and his crew. Like, everything that's going on with them, they feel like they're the first line of defense. And
they really do. And again, to the people with the red hats, like, we need to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, see, I kind of found that I found, like, the Boomer story to be just, like, kind of whatever. I was, like, way more invested in the president story.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought that was kind of, if I were to like make a cut of the movie and like separate them all, I would probably be more apt to watch like the president's story unfold and just leave Boomer like doing whatever.
I was kind of surprised that John Candy was like listed first because I was like he's not really in that much of the movie because the president seems to have the bigger. I mean, it's definitely the bigger stakes, and it feels like it takes up more of the movie.
Yeah, Alan Alda to me seems like. The top, like if I would have guessed not knowing, I would have said he was the person to be top billed.
Yeah, and he's the character without a name. Yeah. What is it that they say about Toronto when they first see Toronto? It's like, did they say Albany? It's like Albany only cleaner, or
yes,
yeah. You know, being in the area, have you spent time in Albany, Chris?
I was in Albany like twice when I was in college.
Does Albany deserve the jabs that they gave it, though?
I honestly couldn't tell you. Okay. I don't really remember that. It was 20 years ago.
Okay. Hey, kid, where is everybody? Canadian National Tower. Some crazy woman there with a gun.
The fact that when the Mountie picks her up and they're like, they are like this woman with this gigantic machine gun, and they're like, you're littering.
Well, and the scene with Dan Aykroyd is absolutely priceless too. The fact they get pulled over because the signs aren't translated into French, and then he makes them do it. Like that's the best joke in that is the fact that they It's not what it says. It's just the fact that it's not in French. You can say, yep. Die, Canada, die.
Yep. And then the fact that it's like, that's a $100 fine. Or 10 American if you'd like.
Yeah. I think I loved, like, I did like the Boomer stuff for, because I guess that's, with Boomer is where you get to see those, I guess, like, Canadians, the stereotypes of what, like, it's almost like...
Yeah, the real satire of it.
It's almost like it's the stereotypes of what Canadians think Americans think about Canadians. And mm-hmm. so it's like the cheap money, the we're so nice, but it's like that's where, even when they show Honey in the hospital and she's, like, surrounded by, like, teddy bears that have come from the Prime Minister and all these local celebrities and stuff, and you're like...
The moment where she opens up the curtains and it's like just
shows
ice,
the sled
ice
dogs.
And the
Ottawa.
Ottawa. And I love the argument over the fact that, oh, she's been taken to the capital. Toronto. No, Ottawa is the capital.
Like, you had me.
You had me. Yeah. Or how nice the little old couple that runs the hydro plant.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The electric plant.
Do you run the power for the entire country? Yeah. Pretty much. See, and I like the scene when, to the American stereotypical, like, position on Canada, when Kevin Pollak is trying to get the guy on the Canada desk to, like, help him out. And he's walking down the hall and he's like, look at all these things they do. And I'm like, but that's good. But that's good. We should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are things too, like, even with how, like, obviously, cause not that Michael Moore is anti-American, but he's definitely like tries to put a lens on America. But you know, this movie is like pre Columbine, pre,
Fahrenheit 9/11.
And just, like, all, like, the mass shooting incidents and all that stuff. But it's, you can tell he's still very much, like, putting a lens on how, like, gun-hungry and, like, gun-loving the States is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, he's talking about, like, there's even guy says, like, they have the socialized medicine and the metric system.
Oh, yeah. The metric system.
Yeah, I was trying to tell him that we're minus 40 overnight lows here right now. And he's just, okay. Colder than Siberia.
To be fair, I knew zero was freezing, so that's pretty damn cold.
Yeah. It's really cold.
No, I actually think yours makes more sense. I just don't know how it works. Zero is freezing, 100 is boiling. That makes sense.
Yeah. I guess one thing we haven't really talked about is Hacker and his whole evil villain plot that he's got going on throughout this movie. I mean... Was him as a villain really that necessary?
I mean, it feels like something that kind of does happen, just not as directly. Mm-hmm. Like, the idea of we have a big businessman who's worried about himself, so he's, like, paying off somebody in the government feels real to me. I just feel like you'd be paying off somebody in Congress, not somebody in the cabinet.
Yeah, that's true.
But... I feel like he wouldn't be the one pushing the word. Just give me money.
Yeah.
I was on board when he's talking to Stewart about like getting about restarting a war, because I get that would help. But it's like, but his aim, like, to me at that time, like, his goal and the president's goal are the same.
Yeah.
It's like the president wants his approval rating to go up, and basically by inciting war, like, I would assume that, you know, Hacker's business would improve. Like, I'm sure he's got other plants and stuff, like, so he'd be making or they would reopen the plant and make more weapons.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't really understand then the turn to also, like, start threatening with his own missiles, I guess.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's the only part where I'm no longer on board, is the part where he becomes mustache-twirling villain and I want $1 trillion. It's like, well, okay. You know, like, I was on board with everything that he does to, you know, try to incite some sort of action. But other than that, yeah, it's $1 trillion. Come on, man.
I had trouble following the whole, like, all right, I sold it to them, but it's not... good, okay, I have it, so now I'm launching, and like, oh, we're launching at Moscow, but are we launching at Canada? Like, I couldn't even follow what he was actually even doing.
Yeah.
I didn't get why all of a sudden at the end they bring Russia back into it.
Yeah.
And it should have just been like a Canada verse. Like, it should have just been like, well, Canada's threatening us. Like,
point all the missiles at Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
It seemed like, oh, well, nobody changed to where they were pointing. Okay, so why is he still pointing them there and not just changing the direction to Canada? That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was odd. I liked Hacker as like the voice in Smiley's ear, but as soon as he became like the uber villain at the end, I was a little bit not there for it.
Yeah.
Is the CN Tower actually an antenna?
It might be.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt it's actually like a nuclear antenna or whatever, but still, I'm wondering whether that's actually the point of it.
It would make sense. It would.
Yeah.
It says here it's a communications and observatory tower, so I would say it probably is.
Yeah. Okay.
Because that's why they do that. You know, it's the biggest thing in the city. There's nothing in the way. It's so tall.
Yeah.
You know what? The other thing I didn't really understand was how they even got to decide, like, Canada. Like, it felt like Alan Alda was like, what do you want me to do, attack Canada? Well, and then, like, completely separately, somebody was like, let's go after Canada. And it just, like, the way they got there didn't feel like it made sense to me.
Well, he just threw it out as a joke because it's like, who's the last person they're going to actually attack? Even though Canada and the U.S. have been in a war against each other once in history, but, yeah, back in 1812, we burned down the White House.
Yeah. In
Canada. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's just where you have to follow that thread, though, is, well, Canada, why don't we go after Canada? And someone says, okay, yes, why not? Let's not go against someone that we actually know is going to be a threat to attack us back.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to start firing missiles at North Korea.
Oh, that was the guy who was like, it was the Canada, that was the Korea that we like. I don't care.
I do also like the list of dead when they're trying to figure out who to actually go to war against. Yeah. Okay, so Honey gets rescued and they go home, and but they just leave without the other two? Like, did the other two say that they wanted to stay in Canada? They just take off. They get on the boat and just go back.
Yeah, they just kind of forget about them, don't they?
Yeah.
You don't really find out until they have the cards at the end of what happened to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roy Boy was never seen again or something like
that. Yeah, they were just sitting by the fire.
Yeah.
In Canada.
Apparently that scene where they are sitting around the fire discussing the Dirty Dozen and, you know, black people always dying first in movies and all that sort of thing. The addition of Forrest Gump in that conversation was something that was added in later, because
you know what, I caught that because I was like, this is 1995. That's like, yeah, that had to be a really, really late addition, because that movie was what, 1994?
Yeah. So they actually added in Forrest Gump as another example of black people that die before the white protagonist.
It's fresh in everyone's head, for sure.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like, I got one more joke, can slip it in there. That'll add an extra 10 grand to the bank.
What do you think they are, Marvel, with these reshoots?
Is that the reshoot that the one producer had to do? The one that was in charge of the reshoots? Well, anyway, there we go. I think that's Canadian bacon. Now, Colin, Chris, on IMDb. Back bacon. On IMDb, it scored 5.9 out of 10. Has a Metascore of none listed. Not much box office. No Metascore, I guess. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 12% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 52%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, knocking a old man off of a balcony. Hit us with some reviews.
I will do so. I'm still like, I'm actually like very curious to know about the
box office situation.
Yeah, like I'm still very like.
It is mysterious. Yeah.
It feels like it could not have gotten a wide release if it was that low, right?
Yeah. I don't think so. So someone sent out some coupons that forgot to put like some sort of disclaimer at the bottom. Oh, it's supposed to be 2-for-1 coupons, but it doesn't say one per use. So...
All right. Joel H. says 2 out of 5 stars. It's a shame the Canadian Bacon is John Candy's final film. He was such a comedic president, such a comedic presence, and his talents are almost completely wasted here. This movie isn't funny, it's smug. It feels as if an angry person was trying to thinly veil their annoyance by telling everyone they're just joking. And when I found out this movie was written and directed by Michael Moore, that feeling made sense. The story is nonsensical and the humor consists of the same 3 jokes repeated ad nauseum. Americans are gun-toting idiots, Canadians are overly nice idiots, and the government is a bunch of power-hungry idiots.
Everyone's an idiot. That's fair.
Landon J. says 2.5 out of 5 stars. John Candy keeps it together, but it's not overly memorable. It's one of his lesser films. Funny here and there, but not great. As a Western Canadian, Moore's portrayal of Canada is so off and stereotypical, it's clear he actually knows very little of the country. So much overused nonsense that has nothing to do with the West. A, which nobody I know says it all. A boot. Maybe some Easterns say this. Nobody I have ever known in my life talks like this. Utopian paradise. Lots wrong with the systems in place here. Excessive politeness, complete BS. And the Melanus is so dumb and untrue, but then again, the wacko East may relate to some of this, not sure. He should stick to his biased, hardline, progressive-based documentaries, because this is pure mediocrity right here, folks.
That person just in the review proves that the politeness isn't a Canadian thing.
That's true.
You're just rude, sir.
Mick Mladen says 5 out of 5 stars. The frightening thing about this film is the same as with any great work of art. Its value remains the same, and you can fit contemporary events into it just like it was the case at the creation time. It is almost sad that we've gone down the lane in spite of all the warnings given by the author Michael Moore. We can see brainless zombie rioters raised as much easily as stew is moving them, with master thesis exchange with the exact real problems moving under the rag. The excellent crew brings this film to a serious level of criticizing the society while at the same time making it look like light, entertaining, and family friendly.
Apparently Michael Moore's dad was Canadian and immigrated to the United States. So I guess that might be why he has some love for Canada, if you can call the fun he pokes at us love. I think it's loving fun. I don't know.
I think so. I mean, I think it's more criticism of the U.S. and just playing with Canadian stereotypes to do it.
But. Yeah, like the one, was it one of the reviews or was it Colin that said, but it's more what the Americans think of the Canadians.
Yeah.
All right, this last one is a bit long, but it's a good one. It's from a woman named Edith Boner. 1 out of 5 stars.
That's made up.
Yeah, but you don't need to say anyone. This is the best review already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was 7 years old when my mother and father took me to Canada for a vacation. All I can remember are the funny people and different pronunciation I heard. I'm 48-year-old woman now. 3 children, 2 girls, and 1 boy. My pride and joy. Though recently my little Brennan, my youngest, came up to me and asked if we could go to Canada this spring break, I nearly fainted. Now, I have only been once, but I assure you, I will never set foot in Canadian land again. My ex-husband came up to me a few years ago when the 2017 election was held, telling me we should move to Canada since he didn't like both our candidates. I told him no. He said he was moving to Canada by himself then and packed his bags and left. We are divorced now, and he is with a 29-year-old Canadian stripper. Good for you, Calvin! After that, I was heartbroken, but it wasn't either of our faults. It was Canada's tempting land. They're all awful and stupid people. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is enough proof itself that Canadians are an issue. My name is Edith Boner, and I have been a mother against Canada for 5 years now after my husband left me for Canada. I have many files of proof how Canadians infect normal people. Justin Bieber, Keanu Reeves, Drake, Jim Carrey, Celine Dion, and others infect America and bring Canadianism to the land of the free. Despite the no-gun ban, which I appreciate, the crime and the cost of higher education is outrageous. Canada should be destroyed, all caps.
Wow. That was a story to go on.
That's an adventure.
Yeah.
Right on. Man, shots fired at Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, how dare you?
He's our best Canadian ambassador right now.
Who doesn't love Ryan Reynolds?
Exactly. Yeah, so Canadian bacon. I still love it. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I got quite a few chuckles at it, and I still like the fun that it pokes. I mean, I'll be honest. If it hadn't been for, you know, the comparisons between Canadians and Americans on this show, the little fun that we had there, this would have been a hard one for me to talk about because it's just funny. I still find it funny. Like, even with the things that we found weird about it and all that sort of stuff, it still makes me laugh all the way through. I think it's still quite a hidden gem, and I'm disappointed to see that it's sitting around the 50s and that it only made like 170 grand. Like, it's just, that's ridiculous. This movie should have done better than that. I don't know. If you haven't seen Canadian Bacon, you should be watching Canadian Bacon. I'm glad we brought Canadian Bacon to a new viewer. So, segue, Chris, first time viewing, what did you think of Canadian Bacon?
Okay, so I actually watched this movie twice. I was planning to do that because I was like, I want to really like have something to talk about. The first time, honestly, it barely held my attention. I was like, well, I'm definitely going to have to watch it again because I don't think I watched the second half of the movie at all.
Okay.
I liked it more the second time around. I think I can appreciate what it's doing. It's not really my sense of humor, though.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate what they're trying to do with it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's the Canadian in me, right? Maybe it is just that Canadian perspective, but I don't know. I guess it's the fun that they poke at us, but let's see. Is it the Canadian perspective? Colin, on this viewing, what did you think of Canadian Bacon?
I'm probably like dead in the middle. I didn't hate it. I thought it was funny. But like I said before, I definitely like wasn't as into the John Candy stuff as I remember being the first time I watched it. Maybe my tastes have matured. But yeah. I found I was more invested in the president's storyline.
Yeah.
It's a movie that I think I would love to see somebody take the concept and make like an updated pass at in that like mockumentary format that we were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
I agree. I would love to see a good version of this.
Yeah. I definitely think it's a really great premise. But I couldn't help but feel sometimes that it was like, I don't know, what I want to say is like too angry. Like maybe because I knew it was Michael Moore. And sometimes like, as much as I like Michael Moore's stuff, sometimes it just seems like too aggressively like, I don't know, it's beyond satire. It's like he's trying to like, he's really trying to like show you how stupid you are, like in that type of way, and not in like a playful way, but just like look at you dummy, like, and that's
it's not fun the way he's doing it. He's trying to be funny.
Yeah, and I felt like that's kind of at times how I felt like the comedy was coming across, and maybe it just didn't hit me as well as it did when I was younger, but
yeah.
I think it's still like it's still definitely an enjoyable movie and one that I think like people should watch at least one time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Chris, do you hate us for making you watch this movie?
No, not at all.
No, yeah, ultimately you're kind of glad that, you know, well, it was something new to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like I'm somebody who loves TV and movies and I love watching them, but I'm also someone who like never goes back and catches anything he's missed along the way. Like if I don't see it in its initial run or like immediately after it comes out, like I'm just not gonna go back to it. So there's a lot of stuff from like my childhood that like is required viewing that I haven't seen, and I feel like at least, hey, you added something to the things I've seen.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Like, what kind of history do you have with John Candy then? I mean, if your childhood was kind of a, if I miss it, I don't ever see it. Like, do you have any fondness for John Candy, or?
I don't have a lot of history with John Candy, but I do like what I've seen, but I feel like what I've seen is not like the quintessential John Candy stuff. Hmm. Like, love Home Alone, but he's in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's good in it, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I will go back and watch Cool Runnings regularly. I will watch that movie at least once a year, and he's great in it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not really his typical, like, over-the-top comedy style, you know? Like, it's a funny movie, but it's not... He's playing it more straight for the most part, so...
Yeah, and you got more Canada in that movie.
Absolutely.
Get to see our other penis. It's not as big, though.
Don't go telling your wife about that, or your girlfriend, or whatever it is.
Oh, that one's in Calgary. The Calgarians. Oh, okay. they have a small penis. Anyway.
I don't need to know that.
He's getting off rails.
It's the Edmonton Calgary rivalry. You know, we've got the hockey rivalry with the Flames and Oilers. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I gotta take shots at Calgary.
Understandable. Yeah. Like I said, Devils fan. I got the Rangers and Flyers. I understand the rivalries.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, Colin, I guess I can understand your view. It is an angry movie. Maybe it's not as hilarious as I said in my thing. I still love it. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I would just sum it up as, and I kind of wish from the start of the podcast I would have kept a list of these, but it's one of those movies where I'm just like, there's a better movie to be made here off this premise.
I completely agree with you on that one. Yeah. It's like, I don't think it's a bad movie either. Like, I was just kind of bored. I think it was kind of boring. Like, it's a good premise, and there's some funny moments in it, and there's a good movie in there somewhere.
Right on. Well, there we go. That is Canadian Bacon, or Back Bacon, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A big, huge thank you to our special guest, Mr. Chris Gofredo. Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. If you ever feel like having me on again, I'd be happy to come on. It was a good time.
No, for sure.
Oh boy, if you like that show, just tell somebody. You know, if you know someone that likes movies, just say, hey, there's this podcast and maybe you should listen to it. Why not? Right? Or if you want to go over to whatever app and you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars, that would be appreciated. Or if you want to be a producer of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become a part of our Patreon family, and then you get a shout out because you're an executive producer, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And if you want to check out our website, it's IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. You can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, one more Wish You Were Here in the New Year to go. One more posthumously released movie. I'm excited. Next week, we're keeping this Canadian train rolling because we've got Phil Hartman's last movie. Great Canadian Phil Hartman. And
Last scene in Jingle All the Way.
On this show in Jingle All the Way. Yeah.
Now we're going to see him playing almost the exact same guy in Small Soldiers.
Pretty much. Yeah. But I love Phil Hartman. So I can't wait. Yeah. So next week, Small Soldiers. This is one of those that I just kind of have a peripheral history with because it was more my younger brother's age group. So I've seen it, but not a huge history with it.
Yes.
But Phil Hartman.
This would have been like in my, definitely like in my wheelhouse, but I feel like I only watched it maybe a handful of times when I was younger and then never saw it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we go. So, until then, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you next time when we take a look at Small Soldiers on I Used to Like This One.
The date is September. I went in my brain and I was like 22 or 22nd, and then I just lost it.
Get it out of the way first, right?
Yeah. Here.